You know, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, at least one out of three Americans is obese. That's startling news. One out of three. So if you go out with your friends and there's three of you, one of you is obese, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control. And what does that all mean? Well, that's not very healthy, is it? And these numbers continue to go higher and higher and higher. And then with some of the food that people eat, it could be killing you. Could be making you obese. In a moment, we're going to talk with a filmmaker, James Colquhoun, who has two great documentaries out there. One is called Food Matters, the brand new one, Hungry for a Change. And also Daniel Vitalis joins us, a leading health and nutritional expert. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking about your health and food today. We've got a nice treat for you at coasttocoastam.com. If you want to take a look at part of the highlight of the new documentary, Hungry for a Change. James Colquhoun with us. He was with us several months ago. James is a nutritionist, a filmmaker. After extensive studying of nutrition through the Global College of Natural Medicine in Santa Cruz, California, he found the concept that is food matters, and he set out on an international adventure, which he'll explain how that led him to his newest film, Hungry for a Change. Let's first of all bring James on to Coast to Coast. Welcome back, James. How are you?
Great. Thank you, George. Thanks for having me again.
Me too. Looking forward to this. And Daniel Vitalis, a leading health, nutrition, and personal development strategist, as well as a nature-based philosopher, co-founder of SurThrival. He has been a student of live food for more than 15 years. He is featured in the documentary Hungry for a Change, and his journeys have taken him through a vast range of health experiences. So I'm looking forward to this too. Daniel, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hi, George.
Okay, now let's start with you, James, if we can. How did you get interested, one, as a nutritionist, and then turn that into developing documentaries and films?
Well, first thing was really an illness within my family. My father fell quite ill, was diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome, depression, and anxiety. This came at a time when I was studying and researching a lot on nutrition with my partner, Laurentine, and we were discovering the fact that nutrition could really help to heal people, especially people going through my dad's type of condition. Yet at the same time, he was receiving messages from the medical profession that nutrition really didn't matter too much and that medication was more the correct solution for him. And after he was prescribed many different types of medication, his condition continued to deteriorate to the point where the side effects of the medication were so serious that we really had to intervene. And it was this process of my father going through this illness that really helped provide us with the motivation to create a film. I mean, for so many people, when they're unwell or they're looking to improve their health, reading a 350-page book on natural healing is a little bit more difficult than watching a film. So that was how Food Matters began, and now a few years down the track, we've got our latest film out, Hungry for Change. So that's a little bit of our journey so far.
You must have got a kick, James, when Supersize came out, huh? Is that documentary?
Well, I like that film, and I really like that it got such wide mass appeal, really, in the marketplace. And I think that thanks to people like Michael Moore, mm-hmm. for whatever everybody thinks of his films, and thanks to, as well, Supersize Me, that, you know, we have, and Morgan Spurlock, sorry, we have this situation where, you know, documentaries are creating and having a huge impact on popular views about nutrition or about conspiracy or about health, and it's really paved the way for a new era of education, and I think that it's done us well, and it means that we've been able to get our message to maybe a wider audience than we would have 10 years ago.
And we're going to go through this message tonight, James, and let's bring Daniel in here, and then we'll continue with the dialogue here with you two. Daniel, tell us a little bit about yourself beyond just the bio.
Well, you know, for me, this path started about 16, 17 years ago. I was a young person, and I started with a question in my mind, which was, you know, if everything I had been taught was true, and biologically we were some kind of animal, we were some kind of mammal living on the planet, then it occurred to me that we must have some natural diet, some kind of zoological diet that was fit for our species. And I was receiving so many mixed messages from our culture about what to eat. I was really confused about this because I'd watched a lot of food fads happen. So I'd watched fat-free happen, then I'd watched high-fat happen, then I watched high-protein happen. And I watched this shuffling of nutrients around. There was a lot of signals coming from my culture that the food we were eating wasn't good for us, that it was too processed, that it wasn't healthy. But I didn't see a lot of solutions or answers, and the real question for me was, what are we supposed to eat? And so I kind of set off on a journey to uncover that. And it took me a lot longer than I expected, because the story is far more circuitous than I think a lot of people realize. The history of food for humanity goes way back into the early stages of the domestication of food and has led us up to this time now where we're genetically engineering our food. I think people are really confused about what to eat. They're not getting a lot of answers out there. And for me, it's just been slowly uncovering the hidden history of our food. And that's led me to what really today, I love the name of the show, the idea of a food conspiracy, because I think what's going on right now is there's either by design or by grand pattern, there is a food conspiracy now. And the people out there are starving to death, but they keep eating and they keep eating and they keep eating, and they're not getting any answers. And it's because the information is not plainly available to them.
Well, that's so true. And I wish I knew then what I should know, what I know now, because it could have saved me all kinds of problems. You know, I was the kind of guy, James and Daniel, never particularly overweight, but I didn't eat well. I didn't eat healthy. It was a lot of fast food. You know, I was in the broadcast business, so you never really went out and had a nice, quiet lunch or dinner. Everything was quick, quick, quick. Eat a hamburger, get to this assignment, do this, do that. And it paid its toll. You know, the cholesterol builds up and everything else. And, you know, it took some shocking moments in my life to make me realize, you know what? You better control what you're doing, George, or you're not going to be around. And, you know, and I started this kick for myself well over 10 years ago to just start eating healthier, supplements, and taking care of myself. And I'll slip once in a while. You know, I'm a human being. I'll go out and eat something that I probably shouldn't have had, but I get right back into it again and back to the diet and everything else, and it's made a world of difference. James, do you find that, as you put together your documentary, Hungry for a Change, that more people or less are beginning to take care of themselves the right way?
I think that's an interesting question, because as I've involved myself in this niche over the last, 8 years that I've been researching and then making films in this area, I'm a little bit biased and I start to see the world from a different perspective. For me, there's this duality. I do start to see more and more people getting on board with this message, as we're noticing as a culture where we're moving further away from the way that sort of Daniel Vitalis speaks about, the way that we're biologically adapted to eat. People are noticing this and starting to shift back to more natural ways of eating. We're seeing the popularity of organics increasing, we're seeing the popularity of farmers markets increasing. But again, that's from my perspective, and I feel that, you know, it's like the age-old question of science is that it's potentially always flawed because it's from the perspective of a human observer in some aspects. So I feel that my perspective is a little bit biased. I do think that we're seeing more people move towards natural alternatives, but at the same time, in the balance of universal energy, we're seeing darker and nastier secrets and tricks used by multinational corporations, be it in the food industry, be it in the agricultural industry, or be it in the pharmaceutical industry, used to basically manipulate the foods and manipulate our reaction to those foods. So I see both sides of the coin growing. However, I'm an optimistic type person, and I do believe that we're moving towards greater unity in the food space.
I hope so. And Daniel, when we talk about eating live foods, which you've been doing for more than 15 years now, what does that mean? You know, some people would think, oh my gosh, he doesn't cook fish or chicken. He doesn't do any of that. What is live food?
Well, you know, when we talk about live food, I want to be clear, there's a lot of levels of that, and I've experimented with a lot of levels of that. And so I'm not coming on promoting somebody eating 100% live food diet, but I think that the idea of fresh food is incredibly, incredibly important. If you look at the wealthiest, most elite families on the planet, are they feeding themselves highly refined, highly cooked, processed foods, or do they eat fresh foods in their season that are grown in good soils that are heirloom varieties? They choose fresh food. When you go to the best restaurants in the world, are they serving older food or fresh food? What the best chefs in the world know is that the best food flavor-wise, and that really does correlate to nutrition when we're talking about quality food, is food that's fresh and that's prepared with a minimal amount of processing necessary to make it really edible for us. So what I've learned over the years is that the food that I eat, if I can prepare it with minimal processing so that I can enhance its flavor and its digestibility without destroying it, without cooking it down, without rendering it down, without refining it and highly processing it, that I feel better. And I think a lot of people know that. And it becomes particularly important when somebody's interested in detoxifying themselves, because the lifestyle that we've been living is highly toxic, and our bodies become a repository. What we do is we bioaccumulate toxins, and if we want to clear that stuff out of our body, probably the fastest way to do that is to use live foods, at least for a time, where we use things like juices and salads and lightly steamed foods, fresh foods, to really wash our bodies out and clean our bodies. That's a highly, highly effective way to quickly and rapidly detoxify ourselves. And so I think we're seeing a huge movement towards that as well. I think people are really tired of excessively processed foods, and I think they're realizing how lifeless and devoid those foods are. So there's a big movement now, people waking up and realizing that fresh food makes them feel good.
Aren't we, Daniel, eating ourselves to death, in your opinion?
Yeah, we are eating ourselves to death, but unfortunately what's happening is we're actually starving. So this is a really strange conundrum we're in, because we biologically we need a certain amount of nutrition in the form of vitamins, in the form of minerals, in the form of a lot of things that we're just now starting to understand, like the RNA from plants. We realize now that we need all of these things, but the problem is they're not in the modern diet. What is in the modern diet is calories. So what's happening is people are eating and they're eating and they're eating because their bodies are really hungry. Their bodies are looking for minerals. Their bodies are looking for vitamins. But they're not there. What is there is calories, so they keep eating, hoping to find that nutrition they need, never finding it, only finding calories. So what happens is the body starts to put on weight, the hormone system starts to break down, the immune system starts to break down, the body keeps getting bigger and bigger, more inflamed. Eventually the liver starts to become fatty, kind of like a fatty liver of an overfed duck, right, like foie gras, but it happens to us. So what happens is we eat ourselves to death, and then we actually starve on a whole nother level. So both things are going on, which is really strange. And I think we're probably the first generation that's ever seen anything like that.
Well, we sure would. Now, let's talk a little bit, James, how you found Daniel and how did this work out for your documentary?
Well, first of all, Daniel, great to be on the phone with you again. But we're just so enamored to have Daniel in the film. It's something that I came across Daniel's work through Mike Adams, Natural News, and through a few friends' recommendations. And being a filmmaker, I'm quick to see, okay, where has he been? What's he doing at the moment? And I found a DVD on his website, which was a health lecture DVD that he had. I ordered it straight away, put it in the DVD player at home, and I tell this to my closest confidants in the industry that this was the most impactful health lecture I've seen in all my research on this DVD. And I just found it such a great summary and analysis of not only the problem we're in nutritionally, but how that relates to our behavior as a species right from the moment we're born through to the concepts of domestication that Daniel Vitalis talked about, which I think is very profound and I'd love for him to share on this show, and right through to the problems we face today and how we can tackle those problems, from eating live foods to eating foods that we're biologically adapted to eat, and also to sourcing spring water, which is one of Daniel's strong topics as well. So This is how we came across his work, and I saw that he was friends with David Wolfe and speaking with David at certain conventions and conferences. And David, we've had a close relationship with since he featured in our first film, Food Matters. And so we promptly made time to set up a meeting place, and we had the chance to interview him, and it was fantastic, and just so happy that he's a contributor in the film and that his message can be heard by even more people that may have not come across his message otherwise. So I really want to hold Daniel up on my shoulders as best I can and help his message get to the world.
Right, and we're going to get both of your messages out throughout this evening. Why do you believe, both of you, that most people are not aware of the dangers of the things they eat? Daniel?
Well, you know, that it's funny. We could answer this from a few perspectives. James, by the way, thank you for everything you just said. We could answer that a couple ways. I think if you change your paradigm, and a paradigm is all the things you think before you think, right? And if you change your paradigm just a little bit, and you start to look at our civilization today as more of like a factory farm for human labor, I think things start to make a little bit more sense. Why don't people know what they should eat? Well, because that information is being held back and restricted. And it's funny because we are so advanced now technologically, and yet it's like our nutritional science is in the dark ages. I mean, how can that be? How is it that we have the technology to build an internet, we have the technology to build an iPhone, we still can't figure out what we're supposed to eat? I mean, are we supposed to buy into that? So I think what's going on is there's a bit of a factory farming going on. If you look at, it's like saying, why don't cows in feedlots know that they should be eating grass, not grains? Well, because the farmers doesn't want them to know that. The farmers restricting back what's natural for them in order to profit off of them. And so I think our society is doing the same thing. Again, whether by design or some strange pattern that's playing out, that's what's happened today. It's not profitable for us to know how to take care of ourselves. Food's not profitable, ultimately. The only food that's profitable is highly processed, poorly grown foods. And so
that's right.
Not in anyone's best interest for us to know how to take care of ourselves, except our own best interest.
And it takes a lot of discipline, doesn't it, to eat the right things?
I just want to say, George, that in the beginning, because there's some serious heavy addictions, but let me give you an analogy. It's like, because people will say things to me often. They'll say, like, don't you ever just want to break down and have one of these, or don't you ever just want to give in and have a little of this? And I think it's like, you know, if you drove a Rolls Royce every day and somebody came along and said, hey, don't you ever just want to break down and drive a Ford Focus? You know, you might be like, not really. What I'm experiencing is so much better that I don't desire that now. But in the beginning, yeah, the addictions were really heavy, and it took some courage. It took some discipline. It took really immersing myself in a lifestyle because, you know, we have that saying, against the grain, right? And that's a funny saying when you interpret it from a human diet perspective, because grain is really the underlying part of this whole story. But when we go against the grain, you got to really immerse yourself in the culture and lifestyle. Otherwise, you get pulled along with everybody else. So a little discipline in the beginning, but later on, actually, it becomes so easy to live this lifestyle that the idea of going back to such low-quality fodder to cattle feed is almost like a joke.
It is. Let's talk about what the food companies are doing. Our two special guests tonight, James Colquhoun, he's the documentary filmmaker and also nutritionist and leading health expert, Daniel Vitalis. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Indeed it is. And we have two special guests tonight as we talk about hungry for a change. Are the food companies deliberately trying to make us unhealthy? Let's check in on that question when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Are the food companies, in your opinion, James, deliberately trying to make us unhealthy?
I think this is an interesting question, and I see that Daniel's referred to this concept of, is this by design or is this a grand pattern? And for me, as a documentary filmmaker, in researching and creating Food Matters and Now Hungry for Change, I think it comes back to a matter of economics. And for me, that's one of the easiest ways to explain the concept. And for me, it really makes everything fit. Because as Daniel Vitalis said, you know, fresh, local, organic, in-season foods aren't really very profitable because they're prone to perishing. And because of that, the food industry is not very interested in those types of foods. So they focus their attention on processed foods with longer shelf life. And I think once you start to understand the economics more deeply, then you can start to see that, for me, I think that design is a part of it. The monetary economic system, the capitalistic system that we're a part of these days, makes it difficult for people who want to bring great, healthy, quality, natural foods to the market. Makes it difficult for them in comparison to the huge companies that are proponing and selling foods that are processed and dangerous for our health. And then as you start to dig deeper, you see that the additives, the preservatives, and the artificial sweeteners and flavor enhancers that are used in a lot of the food production industry these days are very detrimental to our health, and not only that, also increasing our addiction to those substances. So this all leads me to sort of assume that economics has a big part in this arena.
It sure does. You know, I've always said, follow the money and then you'll get your answers. You just said something very poignant, and that was the addiction to this. Is that why they knowingly put in this junk in the food? Because they know it's going to get you hooked?
I think that's a really interesting observation. And Jason Vale, one of the contributors to the Hungry for Change film, talks about an interesting case in point where in the 60s and 70s, we know that the tobacco industry and the cigarette companies were knowingly introducing more nicotine to their cigarettes in order to make them addictive. Now, his research shows, and a lot of the other experts in Hunger for Change, the film, go to show that the additives and the food chemicals that are being used these days are knowingly, they know this because the research is showing this, they know that these chemicals are causing addictive behaviors within people. Even Yale University has released research showing that artificial sweeteners, in particular the aspartame, which is one of the most widely used artificial sweeteners or sugar-free alternatives in the marketplace today, knowingly contributes to carbohydrate cravings.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody has a diet drink and they're, you know, looking to lose weight or keep healthy, it's actually increasing their carbohydrate cravings, which is going to cause them to eat more food in later on down the track. So
order that big, you know, pizza, right?
Indeed, you know, so if you go get drive through and you get your takeout meal and you have a diet soda, then you're actually going to cause you to crave more carbohydrates, more of the things that you're trying to avoid by making the decision to have that diet drink in the first place. So it's a fascinating thing to uncover.
Is the FDA, the food company's big pharma, are they all in cahoots to do this?
That's a good question, and I think what we do know for a fact is that the revolving door syndrome, or the revolving door, we see the revolving door happening a lot within this industry. So we see people coming from industry to the regulatory bodies, across the agricultural industry, we see it happening across the pharmaceutical industry, and we see it happening across the food industry. And the funny thing is that, you know, the public perception of the FDA is that they're there to protect the consumer's interests. And they're not really there to protect consumer interests. They're there to facilitate the regulation of substances and facilitate their ease into the marketplace. And it's they're not really there to protect people. So people have to make their own decisions and do their own research.
Daniel, as a nutritionist, let's talk about MSG for a moment. I know whenever I've had it and I don't anymore, and I make sure it's not in Chinese food or anything like that that I might eat, that it would give me palpitations and just makes me feel bad. What is it about this stuff?
Well, I mean, it's a neurotransmitter, so it gives us the sensation of being hungry so that we keep eating. Why? Because imagine if we took we're talking about all these additives in the food and these addictive additives and these flavor enhancers, and MSG is a flavor enhancer. Why do we use these things? If you want to understand human biological diet, you've got to look at human beings living in their environment. So we've got to look at indigenous people. And when we look at those people who live off their wild environment, we see that they eat 100 to 200 different plants a year. The average American eats about 10 different plants. primarily the plant they're eating is corn, right? We eat corn, we eat wheat, we eat soy, we eat cottonseed. Few plants, and those plants produce these polyunsaturated oils that can be manipulated to look like a whole bunch of different foods. So the point is, you go to the supermarket, you look around at all these foods, they're made out of a kind of oil that's almost like a plastic. In the same way that so many things around you are made of plastic and they look like a lot of different things. This one looks like a cup, this one looks like a spoon, this one looks like a computer, this one looks like a toiletry kit, but they're all made out of plastic. In the same way, you go to the supermarket, all these foods are really just corn, and they're corn turned into a whole bunch of different things, different shapes, different colors, and it appears to be a lot of different food when in reality, it's really only one rancid plasticized food. Now, in order to make that appear or seem or feel edible to people, you have to enhance its flavors. Basically, like if we look at a fast food at a, say, a drive-thru, what we're seeing is this sort of corn shaped into different foods. The base food, the calorie underneath that would taste probably like soggy cardboard. So what we do is we take that and we add fake flavors to it. And those, like MSG, they give us the experience that we're eating real food. MSG tricks the palate into thinking you have highly nutritious food. So the flavor experience, you hear in Asia them talking about this extra flavor that's out there. It's not sour, it's not sweet. It's sort of a savory flavor that we get when we eat very high quality food. MSG kind of masquerades as that. So the body biologically gets tricked and thinks it has access to real food when in reality it's eating this soggy, wet, sort of plasticized corn that's been made to, it's been made into a shape, it's been colored, and it's been flavored to represent or sort of masquerade as a traditional food, if that makes sense.
What is the deception about diet foods, Daniel?
Well, the deception is, again, there's a couple, but the idea is that, well, it's your fault that you're overweight. You need to go on a diet. The reality is, if you want to lose that weight, there's a couple things that have to happen. One of them is you need to increase your nutrient-to-calorie ratio. This would be really helpful for everybody listening. Sure. Right now, if you add this into your life, a new practice, a new discipline in your life, where when you look at food, you ask yourself, what's its sort of nutrient-to-calorie ratio? And what I mean by that is a bag of chips is going to have very little nutrition, almost none, maybe no nutrition, maybe nothing, but it's going to have a lot of calories. So it has a very low nutrient-to-calorie ratio. If we want to lose weight, we want to feel great, we want to get healthy, we need to reverse that. We want to get very high nutrients, very low calories. So you go to the farmer's market and you start looking at well-grown food, what you're going to notice is it's rich in vitamins, rich in minerals, rich in phenols, rich in antioxidants, but it's low in calories. The diet food deception is they start trying to lower the calories, but they don't increase the nutrition. So you're already starving to death, and now you're getting less calories too. And on top of it, you're getting flavor enhancers, you're getting stimulants, you're getting aspartame, and you're not getting any more nutrition. You're still getting less.
Well, that's a good point. Let's bring you in here for a moment, James, as we talk about this. When you were putting together the documentary, Hungry for a Change, what angle did you pursue?
I think we wanted to help people make better decisions for their health. I mean, that was one of the primary outcomes of the film. And it started really was when my father became well, and he was able to get off his medications by changing his diet and improving his lifestyle. The first thing people said was not, wow, you're not sick anymore. It's great to see that you're off your medication and bouncing around. The first thing they said was, wow, you look good. What have you done? Your skin looks great. You know, you've lost weight. My dad lost about 20% of his body weight. And we get to share clothes now, which is fantastic. And really, what happened was people noticed the physical effects of this transformation in their bodies. And, you know, as we talk about in the film as well, we're biologically adapted to look for healthy people because that's part of us wanting to carry forth our genetics. So this angle of like health and well-being and good skin and helping people understand how they can make choices to get to that point is a good entryway, I think, for really starting to educate people about the deeper questions about, are we really getting enough nutrition through our food, which is what Daniel's talking about, or are we really being deceived when we're reaching for a diet product that we're not actually getting the nutrition we need? So using that as an entryway into helping people dig deeper into this this fascinating concept and discussion about nutrition and health.
Why are the foods that obviously are not good for us, cookies, cakes, things like that, why do they seem to taste so good?
I think, like what Daniel Vitale said, that we have this situation where without any of the flavorings, or in particular without the sugar, we wouldn't actually find them very attractive. And I think sugar is one of the prime proponents here. We have this situation where sugar is used so abundantly in our food processing and food manufacturing industries. And we've come to the point where, and I found this personally, is that when you're eating a high amount of sugar in your diet, you actually crave more sugar. Because what happens within your body when you're eating a lot of sugar is you create these yeast and fungi and this environment. You create this environment in your body, and it starts craving sugar on your behalf. So basically, you're stuck in this trap where you're eating sugar to keep your blood levels afloat, and then once they drop, you're reaching for more sugar again. And so everything within the food industry, the things that supposedly taste so good, a lot of the time they're very sweet, and we have this sensation of being attracted to sweet flavors from our hunter-gatherer days when we used to see fruit, or we used to see natural foods and sweetness as a source of nutrition and as a source of energy. But back in those days, I mean, really, sweet to indigenous people was quite a tart apple in today's standards. So now we're just so surrounded by sugar in all different forms that we've become addicted to it. Our body is craving more of it because of how it affects the makeup of our body. And we're seeing more and more of it in the marketplace as a consequence of that. So when you break that habit, you start to feel better.
Is it primarily the white processed sugar that's not good for us? What about, you know, sugar cane and you know, items like that?
I think natural sugars are great. And I think that we need to look at everything with a little bit of a little bit of moderation in this. And I hate using that term. But what I do like to think is that I don't think sugar is inherently evil in a whole natural form from nature. However, it is very easy to eat too much sugar, and it is easy to eat even too much sugar from natural forms. So people might say, yeah, I'm eating natural sugar, but they're eating, you know, lots and lots of sugary sweet fruit, potentially even out of season, or they're eating lots and lots of, you know, honey, or they're eating lots of sweet, sugary, natural foods. You know, I don't recommend this either, but if we are going to be having sweets in our diet, then we need to make sure they're coming from as natural a whole source as possible. And I enjoy them that way, and I think that many people do, and I think that's a nice thing.
Daniel, what does it mean by detoxification?
Well, the idea of detoxification is simple. Imagine that your body is a lot like a fish tank. And imagine that the outside of that fish tank is like your skin, and the water inside there is like all of the fluid in your body, and your cells are like little fish in the fish tank. And if we start pumping in a lot of toxic food, if we start to pump in through the air filter into that aquarium lots of toxic air, if we start to get bits of heavy metal in there, bits of PCBs, bits of bisphenol A, BPA, if we start to throw genetically modified foods in there, pesticides, herbicides, all that stuff is going to accumulate inside the fish tank. There's only going to be one way to clean that out. We're going to have to stop putting all those toxins into the fish tank, and we're going to have to let the toxic water drain out of the fish tank as we start to feed clean water back into the fish tank. If we do that, what's going to happen is we're going to drain out that toxicity, and we're going to replace it with clean material. Our bodies are the same way, and everybody knows this. You know, we're 75% water. The thing is that water tends to accumulate water-soluble toxins. We're also quite a bit of lipid or fat oil. Every fat cell is a little droplet of oil surrounded by a membrane. That's what a fat cell is. And that oil tends to hold on to oil-soluble toxins. These are things like mercury or cadmium or maybe lead or a lot of the material that's in plastics, these xenoestrogens we're starting to hear more and more about, like BPA, those things accumulate in our body fat. So what happens is the fatty portion of our body is holding on to fat-soluble toxins. The water-soluble toxins are stuck in our blood and our lymph and our cerebral spinal fluid, and we need to drain that stuff out. We need to let the body clean itself. Now, the kidneys and the skin and the lungs and the colon have the ability to eliminate toxins, and they're doing that every day. But the problem is we've been inundated with more toxins in than the body can get out. So it's really helpful to find some strategies that can help us clean our body, just like we'd want to clean out a toxic fish tank. Things that enhance our detoxification are really easy. Eating lots of fresh, whole food, using saunas or exercising so that we sweat, making sure we stay regular in our colon, which is something that's very easy to do when we eat right, drinking fresh, clean water so that we're urinating frequently and we're peeing out those toxins, and breathing fresh air so that our body can eliminate toxic gases via the lungs, that detoxifies us. When you do that, what happens is you have a wake-up that almost feels transcendental. I have seen this literally thousands of times as I've watched people go on detoxification protocols. What happens is a sort of Neo in the Matrix kind of scenario where all of a sudden they wake up. And what's happened is they've been living under a toxic fog. And when that's lifted, their eyes are opened and they realize sort of, hey, wow, I've been sort of part of a scam here. I think I've been just like in the movie The Matrix, where people realize, whoa, I've been in a tank and my energy's been harvested and I thought I was living a life. That's kind of what's going on here. People are dragging themselves out of bed. They're getting into work, and they're joining the workforce. They're producing labor, but they're not even aware of what their true interior desires are. They're not in touch with it. When they detoxify themselves, there's like a wake-up call. You realize what your potential is, and you can get out and get started doing the things that you really love.
Do you think a nutritional class should be, you know, must-carry in high schools?
I mean, the fact that it's not really helps us to tune into what's actually going on. I think that probably more important than a nutrition class would be getting kids involved with food production, because that's really where, I heard a teacher say a couple years ago, she was talking to her students about what foods come from the ground, and one of the students offered spaghetti. So, you know, kids don't even know where food comes from anymore. To them, it comes from packages, it comes from stores, and it's so highly processed that it doesn't even often resemble something that came out of a natural environment. I think probably better than just nutrition classes would be to get kids involved with school gardening programs early on. I think getting their hands in the soil. Recent study came out, and this is really fascinating. Preliminary research is indicating that soil-based organisms, right? Soil is not sand or dirt. Soil is a living thing, and it's made up mostly of microorganisms. And the microorganisms in soil, there's certain ones that when you get into soil, when you breathe them, when you touch them, when you drink natural water that contains them, they actually cause your body to produce serotonin, and you actually become happier.
That's right.
Soil organisms work like antidepressants. So part of what's going on is people are in such a sterile environment today, all of the factors in the environment that stimulate good feelings are gone, and people have become addicted to pharmaceuticals to replace that. So I think getting kids out into soil, seeing where food comes from, taking them out into wild environments would be infinitely more valuable than a nutrition class. Nutrition class is sort of a Band-Aid fix.
Let's talk about pharmaceuticals and genetically modified foods when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM.